Welcome to the Expectations Letting Go and Living Beyond workshop of WCNA 34. My name is Katie, and I'm an addict. Can we please open this meeting with a moment of silence, followed by the Serenity Prayer? God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. God. I've asked a friend to read, who is an addict?
I'm an addict named Ransom. Who is an addict? Most of us do not have to think twice about this question. We know. Our whole life and thinking was centered in drugs in one form or another, the getting and using and finding ways and means to get more. We live to use and use to live. Very simply, an addict is a man or woman whose life is controlled by drugs. We are people in the grip of a continuing and progressive illness whose ends are always the same, jails, institutions, and death.
I've asked someone to read, what is the NA program?
I'm an addict named Dan.
Hey, Dan.
NA is a nonprofit fellowship or society of men and women for whom drugs have become a major problem. We are recovering addicts who meet regularly to help each other stay clean. This is a program of complete abstinence from all drugs. There is only one requirement for membership, the desire to stop using. We suggest that you keep an open mind and give yourself a break. Our program is a set of principles written so simply that we can follow them in our daily lives. The most important thing about them is that they work. There are no strings attached to NA. We are not affiliated with any other organizations. We have no initiation fees or dues. No pledges to sign, no promises to make to anyone. We are not connected with any political, religious, or law enforcement groups and are under no surveillance at any time. Anyone may join us regardless of age, race, sexual identity, creed, religion, and or lack of religion. We are not interested in what or how much you used or who your connections were, what you have done in the past, how much or how little you have, but only what you want to do about your problem and how we can help. The newcomer is the most important person at any meeting because we can only keep what we have by giving it away. We have learned from our group experience that those who keep coming to our meetings regularly stay clean.
Thank you. And I've asked another fellow addict to read a portion of our literature.
I'm an addict named Tammy. This comes out of How It Works. Step one, we are never immune for having our lives become unmanageable, even after years of recovery. If problems pile up and our resources for coping with them dwindle, we may feel out of control and in too much pain to do anything constructive for ourselves. We feel overwhelmed by life, and feelings seem to make everything worse. When our lives seem to be falling apart, we reapply ourselves to the basis of the NA program. We stay in close contact with our sponsor, work the steps, and go to meetings. We surrender again, knowing that victory lies with the admission of defeat. The feeling of love and acceptance we find in the fellowship of Narcotics Anonymous allows us to begin recovering from our addiction. We learn a new way of life. The emptiness from which we suffered is filled through working and living the 12 steps. We learn that our addiction is being addressed in all its complexity by this simple program. We found a solution to our hopelessness. There is a deeply spiritual nature to our program of recovery. The 12 steps of Narcotics Anonymous will take us on a journey that will far exceed our expectations. Working and living the steps will lead us to a spiritual awakening. Step one is the beginning of this spiritual journey. We get started on this journey, we must become willing to surrender to this program and its principles, for our future hinges on our willingness to grow spiritually. We are starting a new way of life, one that offers great joy and happiness. However, recovery doesn't exempt us from pain. Living life on life's terms combines moments of happiness with moments of sadness. Wonderful events are mixed with painful ones. We will experience a full range of feelings about the events in our lives.
At this time, I would like to introduce our first speaker, William T. from Texas.
Good morning, everyone. I'm an addict. My name's William. I'm here today from, wherever my bus is parked, I would usually say that's where I'm at. So I've been blessed with a lot of great things in my life, and of course, the first one is recovery. And also, I think the fact that I get to speak here at a world convention. I got an email, and then I got a text, and then I got another email, and then I got a phone call from somebody from the convention committee wanting to know if I would commit to this. And I have a hard time speaking, so I was real reluctant in saying, you know, yes, I would come and speak at this convention. Because, I mean, you know, I walked in here and look at this room. It's like so huge. And I'm like thinking, there's no way that this room could be full of people today. And I'm really glad that it's not. So, I had to think, and I called back and I told them that I would commit to speaking. And then I got an email saying what the topic was about, and I'm like, oh no, so why does it have to be so hard, you know? Because the word expectation really messed me up, but the other part of that is the letting go and living beyond. And so, like I said, I've had a blessed life. I mean, I know when, a little bit about my background is, you know, like a lot of us, you know, I had a pretty rough childhood, I've had lots of things going on. I grew up in a very poor family, and I was just thinking earlier, it's like, you know, when I was 7 years old, I'm only 47, which is not too old, and but, you know, we still had an outhouse in the middle of town, you know, so I was from a very poor family, and I was always told that I would never be anything. And, you know, it's just definitely not right. I don't think I ever believed that, but these are my parents telling me that, you know, and I'm like thinking, well, you know, if I'm never going to be anything, then what is there, you know, what is there to live for? And I started using quite young. I mean, I was using, I was drinking six packs at the age of 8. And, you know, I never found drugs until I was in the 10th grade. And I remember the first time that I smoked pot and nothing ever happened. And the second time something happened. And within 6 months I was dealing. And, you know, by the time I was 19, I was in lots of trouble. You know, and I was thinking I was very blessed that I was in lots of trouble at 19, because I don't think I would have lived if I hadn't gotten clean so young. So I got clean at 25, and I knew when I completely surrendered, because I was in and out of treatment centers a couple of times, and you know, I ran a game that was pretty good, I suppose, and I never thought that there was anything wrong with me. I never thought that, you know, drugs ever played any type of a role in my life, or we'd be in and out of jail, and just all the shit that happens, you know, when we're addicts and we're living the dream of getting stoned all the time. And I thought that I was always going to be that old guy on the chair, in the rocket chair, smoking pot, you know, and it was just so funny that that's not where my life is today. You know, I was like, you know, because I got busted and I was told I couldn't use, and they were dropping UAs on me. And I'm like, what's my life going to be like? You know, I might as well just die. So I know the day I surrendered, I was married and I was on a 3-day run and I had 4 children and beat the crap out of my wife, and I wanted her to leave. And that's just not the person I was. So it was almost like I was watching a movie of me destroying my whole life. And I knew that there had to be something different. So I remember I went to jail, you know, the cops drug me out with a gun to my head, and I was on paper, and, you know, my PO told me if I so much spit on the street, I was going to serve a prison term, and I was terrified. So I remember just getting on my hands and knees, because I've been in and out of the program before, and I met some addicts, and I had a telephone number that stayed in my wallet from an addict, and I called him, and I was praying to God to, you won't let me die, so you have to show me another way to live. And this addict calls me, and he takes me to NA event, and there started my recovery. I saw all these people living and enjoying life, you know, at a dance, and they were hugging people and just having a good time, drinking coffee, eating their cookies. It's like, you know, and I was a wallflower thinking, man, this can't be what life is about. It just can't be. You know, but man, they started coming up and giving me hugs because I had 2 days clean. I was like, it felt really good. You know, I actually felt the love of the fellowship. You know, and I mean, my recovery journey is probably like a lot of others. You know, I didn't have a car, didn't have a job. It was just all kinds of things happened. I was kicked out of the house, you know, but for some reason, by that simple prayer of God, you have to show me another way to live, all these events happened in my life. So I think, I don't know if they said a lot now, but I think they used to say when I was first getting clean that, you know, if I would hear people with some clean time say that, you know, if I would have written down what my life would be like today, that I would have really shortchanged myself. And believe me, if anybody told me that I would be 47 years old, I really don't have a job. I work when I want. I travel in a bus. You know, I have a little Jeep I pull behind it. I've been in so many places on the East Coast, you know, through the Central U.S. I did the whole West Coast this year. I went to Europe. I would say, you're absolutely crazy. You know, you're absolutely crazy. And it's not by anything else but just a belief of letting go of all that stuff in my life, saying that I can't do and I can't have. And it's not that I'm a greedy person. It's not that, you know, it's nothing except just this belief inside of me that life is too short, you know, and I want to go and live and enjoy as much as I can. So you know, I started this little company in Austin. I ended up in Austin because I was in a relationship with I was living on South Padre. She lived in Austin. We met in Corpus. You know, it was sex. And it was. I told her that. She wanted to get married. And I'm like, listen, you know. But I moved to see her because I was living with another girl on South Padre Island. So you think it was sex. So that our relationship lasted like 2 weeks because she was shooting heroin and she'd been clean for 5 years prior. But she started shooting heroin and it just didn't work, you know. And our relationship lasted like 2 weeks, I think, you know, and she never got clean. And she passed away a few years ago because she never could get clean. But that move probably started my life, even though I had some clean time. Because when I found Austin, I guess I found a place where, you know, it's just something about the city. I don't know. I'm sure that other people experience it. You know, I know that I don't know if I was just ready or what, but something started happening. All this stuff started happening to me that was just absolutely beautiful. You know, I worked for people, and I never seemed to fit anywhere. So it's just kind of interesting. I never seemed to fit anywhere, and I have a confidence about myself. I think that people like are really scared of, and because I usually just say what I feel and I do what I want, I try not to like step on anybody's toes. But I also am kind of strong-willed and have it. You know, my name is Will I Am. So it's just kind of. It's just kind of wild. I was like, you know, I'm kind of losing my train of thought. So anyway, Austin, I started this little company, you know, I started this little company and because it's not that I wasn't employable. I was just, I think so much, and I think just like all addicts, we're very interesting human beings, and we have so many talents. And I think for me, I was afraid of like my talents and just coming out of that box of like I have to fit in this box of I have a 9-to-5 and insurance and all that stuff. Well, I don't have any of those things today, and that doesn't really even bother me, you know. And I don't like living in a box. I never have and never will. And I don't like being put in a box. I don't like any of that stuff because, you know, earlier this morning, I was like, I just wanted to get out of the freaking hotel room and just drive. And so I went and got my truck and I started driving, you know. And it was just a few blocks, but it was just doing that, you know, just kind of calmed me down a little bit. And so living in this box that people wanted to put me in, I always seemed kind of squashed so I started this little company and I started painting houses for people. And anyway, it grew into this huge corporation where I had all these people and all these employees and two other businesses. And it was just like amazing, you know, because here, this addict that used to steal and cheat and lie was having keys and codes to like all these people's beautiful mansions. Because believe me, I worked for some pretty wealthy people. And you know, I work for doctors and attorneys, which is kind of a trip because I have a landscaping company and I build houses and I had a nursery and you know, these doctors would be out digging ditches for me, you know, because they wanted to talk to me. And here I don't have any education, you know. So if you think I went to like what 60 hours of college or something like that. So these PhD doctors were talking to me because at that time, you know, there's not a lot about addiction, but they found out that I was an addict. So they would like come out and dig ditches with me so they could talk to me about addiction because they were treating so many people with addictions. And I thought that was pretty amazing. And here, you know, like I said, I feel that I'm not an educated person, but you know, I'm talking to PhDs, and so my expectation was that I didn't know anything, but yet they were talking to me about addiction, and it was just absolutely fascinating that I would have these conversations with these wonderful guys, and they'd be out digging ditches, and I'm like thinking, this is just something else, you know, this is just something else. And so I have always allowed myself to, well, I learned one time at a seminar, because I go to some seminars outside of the fellowship, you know, and there was this one seminar in San Antonio, and the thing I took away from that whole weekend was that there is nobody better than and nobody less than I am. And that was a kind of a moving statement because, you know, I've learned that, I mean, I try not to put anybody down. And I, you know, sometimes I feel embarrassed about talking about my life because, you know, when I was in the, I went to Michigan and all the East Coast last fall, and I was like thinking, you know, the fellowship is pretty tough up there, man, because there's a lot of bad things going on. And you know, I was in Detroit and Flint, and like every place was shut down, and there was nobody on the streets. And it was, you know, here I am from a place that's thriving in the economy, and I'm traveling by choice, and it's not because I was fired from a job or my company closed down or anything. Is I chose to do that. And I felt kind of embarrassed about living my life that way. And I just don't want to, I didn't want to let anybody know what I was doing and stuff. And I was just trying to just be there and just kind of hang out with the fellowship. And it was kind of a tough experience for me. And, you know, I did the same thing just all over the East Coast. I had such a good time and met so many people and hanging out at meetings and just being with the fellowship was, which is what I get to do today, is I get to go to lots of different places and hang out and be with fellow addicts. And we were talking earlier, it's like, you know, because they don't do meetings the way we did it, you know, and I was like thinking, you know, I don't like this. So I don't understand the smoke break. I don't understand the clapping stuff. I don't understand the telling my clean time. It's like, what is up with all this, you know? And it's like, but the fellowship works because, look, there's a bunch of clean addicts from all over the world here, you know. So I had to let go of what I thought. Because when I moved from, like, Missouri to Texas, it's like, they don't, you know, we did the countdown before because we wanted to find out who the newcomer was so we could have a newcomer meeting. And, you know, they do the countdown backwards at the end of the meeting. It's like, and they don't even know who it is because they want to show up late so they can get a key tag. And it's like, oh my God, it was so crazy. So, and I had a lot of problems stepping on people's toes because of the fact that my expectations of where I came from wasn't the same as their expectations. And it cost me my service position because I really enjoyed doing service for the fellowship. And, you know, and I think that it was, it's just because I didn't know how to let go and just let personalities be. And I don't want to cop resentments because I don't want to go use, you know. I don't want to cop resentments because of silly things. And, you know, I just want to live my life, and that's what I try to do today. Well, I don't try. I live my life today, you know. It's kind of hard when people ask me what I do, and I say I travel. And you know, it's not because, you know, it just is the way it is. It's just always just good things seem to happen to me. And I meet people, and I get to go help them out, and you know, I get a little bit of cash and whatever the hell it is. So I just don't believe. I know when I first got here, I lived on like, I don't know, $12,000 a year. And I went to lots of conventions and lots of meetings. So I know that I can do anything I want to do. And I've always had that belief of just being okay, just right where I was at. And I don't know if that was like a God-centered thing for me or really what it is. I just know that I think the fellowship has given me like some belief in myself, and the steps have given me belief in myself and this confidence. And I think it's not necessarily even confidence. Like I said, I think that I've always had it inside me the whole time. And just by letting go of all the bullshit in my life, it's like allowed, you know, this other part of me to come out, this creative part and just a loving, caring person that I am today. And I mean, oh my God, it's just, I get in so much trouble wherever I go. I don't know why. I like to have a lot of fun. I like to crack up and there's people out here that I've only just met recently. You know, I got to spend some time in Memphis. I was only like going for a day and I ended up at this damn function that they had, this Halloween house, there's haunted house that they have. And they taught me how to play these 5 chords on the piano. And oh my God, it's like, how did I get involved in this? You know, it's like, I just wanted to go to a meeting, you know. It's like, but it got me out of the box. And I ended up staying there like 6 or 7 days and hung out with the fellowship there. And it's just such an awesome time. And the same thing happened with me in Maryland. And the same thing happened with me in Niagara Falls, and it happened with me in Louisiana, and you know, then I ended up out here. I came out early to kind of scope out a place to stay for the World Convention, and I ended up in Newport Beach, and I was only going to be there a couple of nights, and I was there 7 weeks, and it was like, those people were so much fun, and just had a good time, and it's like, man, you know what, life is just so good, and it's like, you know, how can, you know, it kind of, I don't know why I'm getting choked up. It's just like, it's kind of hard to believe from where I came from and what I was supposed to be, you know, where I'm at today. I tried like a couple of years ago to be with my family of origin. And, you know, sometimes, you know, I mean, sometimes, you know, they say that, you know, you get everything back when you get clean. Well, that's not necessarily true because I don't want some of that stuff back, you know. My family and I don't fit, you know, it just doesn't work, you know, and as you know, I've got almost 22 years clean, and I've tried for years, you know, and I've worked steps, and I've been through therapy, and I've done all kinds of crazy shit, you know, and I'm not a bad person at all, but I just don't put up with all the crap, you know. I'm not going to put up with yelling and screaming and arguing and all that stuff when I go to family dinner. I'm just not going to do it, so I don't have to do that. I don't have to live those places today, so I had to let my family go, and it was tough. You know, it was really tough for me to do that because I want somebody to, I want that, like, you know, I want that love, huggy, fuzzy feeling that, you know, you're supposed to be at Christmas time. And you know, it's just not real in my life, you know, and I kind of create my own fun and my own fuzz, I guess. So, you know, I have a son too, and God, I love him to death. I love him more than anything in the world. And he's 22, so he was born right before I got clean. And man, that's been such a difficult relationship. And you know, I just try to just hold on and just say, one of these days, you know, he'll come around. And it's not that it's easy, but I have to let him go and I have to let him live his life. And you know, I have the same cell phone number I've had for 17 years, so he knows it. He can call it if he wants to talk to me. But those are tough things for this addict to go through. I don't know about any other addict, but those are tough things for this addict to go through. I used to have the expectation he was going to come and live with me and I was going to send him to college and all that stuff. And, you know, he's a drug addict. You know, he's sleeping on the streets and it's tough. You know, it's tough for me to allow him to do that because I want to save his ass. And I can't, you know. The only person that I can save in this fellowship is me. So, and by living and working, you know, the way that I work my program, it's like, that's the only thing that I have, and that's my only saving grace. You know, there's something else I want to talk about because I'm really pissed. And it's my sponsor, ex-sponsor, because, you know, when I told him that I was buying this bus, I mean, I worked real hard. It took me a little bit of time to liquidate all my stuff and to get everything organized and to have everything paid off. I mean, so I can just do what I wanted to do. Really, the whole cause of this insanity, which some people may think is in my life, is, you know, I got real sick back in 08 and I had colon surgery and I'm like, have all these employees and I'm like getting all these phone calls because I'm like, I can't like move for 2 months. And I'm like thinking, what am I paying all these salaries for if these people can't take care of my job? You know, it's like, what am I doing? So I just said, you know what? That's it. I pulled the plug and sold everything and I told my sponsor what I was doing and I was going to travel and because I was just tired. You know, I was just tired and he told me I was going to get loaded. And I told him, fuck off, you know, because that is just, who in the heck can tell me I'm going to get loaded because I want to take care of myself. So I think if I continued the things that were driving me nuts and stressing me out, that yeah, I could probably get loaded there by not taking care of myself. But today, man, I get to way too many meetings, you know, and I know too many people, and I'm pretty open, man. I mean, it's like, true, right? I know Memphis is crazy for me. It was like, I was all sad and shit and crying in a meeting. I was like, what the hell? Because I missed Narcotics Anonymous. The Narcotics Anonymous I grew up in, I really missed it. And that's what I felt there in Memphis was they had a really tight knit organization of people that really cared for each other. And I'm sure that, you know, there's little things that go on, but for the most part, they really cared about each other, you know, and I got in some trouble when I was in Austin because of just some things. I guess I didn't feel that same connection that I felt when I was in Memphis or when I got clean in Missouri, you know, and that's all good, you know. It's like all that stuff will heal and change, and that's what it's about, man. Because just because one thing happens to me today, I have the ability to change it tomorrow. So I'm very, very blessed to know that, and it just keeps me going another day at a time, you know. How much time do I have? Oh God, he should have 5 to 10 more minutes. So I'm glad I had 3 cups of coffee at breakfast. I don't know if I guess I go to living beyond is, you know, because I feel I am living beyond. You know, I'm completely out of that normal box that I was talking about, doing things that I never dreamed about doing. I mean, I'm a poor kid from the wrong side of the tracks, a piece of shit and never be anything. That's the love of my family. you know, and for the longest time, even clean, I still believe that. You know, and I can't tell you when that changed for me. I really don't know. But today, you know what? I deserve everything I have. I worked real hard. I'll do anything for anybody. I don't care. Any addict that's in need, man, I'm going to help you out. And this doesn't necessarily mean monetary or anything like that. Sometimes it's just taking that phone call at 3 o'clock in the morning. Sometimes it's just picking an addict up and taking him to coffee. Sometimes it's just getting to a meeting or taking him home after a meeting. You know, sometimes it's just setting up the chairs. I mean, you know, I do a lot of service in NA. That doesn't necessarily mean I have to be up here or I have to be some position holder. I just find that making coffee and putting up chairs is just fine with me. You know, I don't have to be anybody or anything. I just do that. And it's amazing to me sometimes how, you know, there's a few that will put up the chairs and make the coffee and there's a lot of people standing around to talk. It's like, man, just pick up your chair and take it where it needs to go, you know? It's just amazing to me. So, and that's what I was talking about, how I missed the fellowship the way it was, because it was small. And you know what? I sat there at Lake of the Ozarks in Missouri with a basic text every Friday night, 7 o'clock, for a year, you know, by myself. And that meeting closed down. And that was kind of tough for me because it had been going for a long time. I mean, for a long time, over 20 years. And it was a shame that that meeting closed down. I remember when I went back to Lake of the Ozarks 2 years ago and they said that meeting shut down. And that is hard, man. It's like, damn, I started that meeting. It shouldn't be closed down. You know, but it's a change, you know. But I know that will of me to go every Friday night. You know, and then I'd get in my car and go to a midnight meeting in Columbia, which is an hour and a half away. And I'd go to St. Louis to a meeting and be in Kansas City the following night to a meeting and then go back home to work Monday. So, and I miss all that camaraderie we had and the smallness of the fellowship and how we really needed each other, you know. And I don't know. I hope, because there's a lot of changes going on at NA. If nobody knows that, you know, you ought to find out. There's a lot of ways that the service structure is changing. And it's important for this fellowship, I think, for its strength and unity to go on. I mean, we do have to learn how to change. We do have to teach our newcomers how to be of service. Man, come on. Put them cell phones in those hotel rooms. What the hell are you going to need a cell phone for in a meeting? No, I'm God. Okay, I'm really just BSing here. I do not believe that about myself. So, it's all good. Now, anyway, it was talking about the fellowship and how we need to learn to change and grow with the fellowship. And, you know, I want to be here in my 70s, still clean and still with a strong fellowship. You know, I want the people that are younger than me to take care of my ass and take me to a meeting and roll my little stroller if that's what I'm in or whatever, you know, come pick me up at the convalescent home and take me to a meeting, you know. So y'all got to stay strong for me because I know that I want to do that for them. I remember I used to take this little man to a meeting all the time. It was just so funny that I used to do that. He was a crazy little shit, but we had a good time. So... You know, and I was like, what, not even a year clean. So it was kind of amazing to be able to be a service then and to be a service now. And like I said, I'm just grateful that I can be involved anywhere. I think I'm very fortunate, you know, because like I said, I have had the ability to travel the world. And man, you know, some people, because I know people outside of the fellowship and I have some really good, strong relationships with people outside of the fellowship. And my friend that's up in the Seattle area, she was like, it's just amazing, William, that you can go anywhere and you know people. And she goes, that's got to be just the most freeing thing. And it is to be able to go and call the NA hotline and say, hey, I'm an addict. I need a meeting. Where's it at? You know, or come and pick me up. You know, and believe me, there's a lot of people can pick me up. But that was cool. And then they bring me back and they see this big ass bus I live in. And they think, what the heck? It's like, because I would tell them I live in a bus. And, you know, when I was at a meeting in Missouri, they thought I lived in a little yellow school bus because I had long hair and a T-shirt. And they think I'm some hippie or something like that. And it's like, no, I grew my hair out because I can today. It was always short, like up until 08. So, well, I grew my hair out because I donated to Locks of Love for cancer. So that was pretty cool thing to do, I thought. And then to have cancer like 9 months later was kind of really crazy. So I was like, shit, you know, come on, God, give me a break. This is a trip. But all that, you know, here I am at a world convention, another world convention, and what a beautiful time, and get to hang out in San Diego. I mean, it was 112 when I was in Austin on Sunday. It's, what, 70 degrees here, you know. And I drove out here from Austin, and that was interesting. Well, I don't know why. It's just like, it was just crazy just to continue driving all day for like 18, 19 hours. Just, I don't know what the hell. That was a 5-hour energy drink. Don't do that. I don't believe in that anymore. So it was lasted like 36 hours. I don't know. It was just my personality or what. It's just like, geez, no food. I don't know what it was, but it jacked me up. So I'm not going to change my clean date because of it. But it's only vitamin B. So, oh, I don't know. I really am just grateful to be here. And, you know, if nothing else, just enjoy yourselves. Relax. You know, I've had to learn to get out of my head. Let go of all that BS. Really just find somebody to talk to. There's lots of addicts. I know I love going to conventions. Is that me? Okay. I love going to conventions, especially in my early years, because I could tell all my shit to somebody that I'd never see again. Not so much true today, but I like going to conventions because of that, you know. It was pretty cool. And like I said, I'm just really grateful to everybody to show up at 10 o'clock in the morning and also to the convention committee again. And thanks for letting me stay clean another day. Thank you.
Thank you, William. I would now like to introduce our second speaker, Wendy D. from New Jersey.
Hi, everybody. My name is Wendy D., and I'm from Paterson, New Jersey. And I want to thank my higher power that I choose to call God just for letting me be here on an occasion such as this, for humbling me and letting me be one of the people that were selected to speak to such a grand people, for loving me to let me stay clean a day at a time, give me some instructions to learn how to live, a great sponsor, a grand sponsor, and a whole bunch of people that I can lean on at any time. And I'm pretty sure even out here with a whole bunch of strangers, if I was going through something and crying, I can go up to air one of y'all and just hold you hostage for about an hour or two. Because after I put down the crack, I was able to talk pretty well. I didn't know that I would be able to talk after I got clean. As a matter of fact, that's one thing, or one of my reservations, why it took so long for me to get clean. Because I didn't know what was going to become of Wendy D. They used to call me Wendy D at Carroll Street. And that's one of those streets in Paterson, New Jersey, and I actually thought I was the queen. As a matter of fact, even before I got up here, I was thinking, I'm like, okay, I need one of those James Brown towels. Because I was perspiring over here, and I didn't know to what magnitude would it get. And not only that, while Willie was talking, I figured I would have time to run and go, you know, to the ladies' room, take care of some things or whatever. I don't know about anybody else, but I'm just one of those natural kind of human beings. When different things go on in my life, a chemical change in my body starts to happen. Sometimes I can control myself and sometimes I can't. I mean, you know, I'm up here to be for real. I believe that my higher power let them pick my CD out of many thousands so that I can not only bring a message of recovery, but to receive one. Because see, when I registered in the beginning for the World Convention, I wanted to get some messages. But when I got an email, like Willie said, and I was asked to make a commitment to speak. Quite frankly, I almost shit on myself. Because there's times when I can look in the mirror and the expectations or the letting go and living beyond or let me see some grandiose figure. That's my ego. And then there are times I can look in that same mirror and see nothing at all. I'm still reminded at times in my body and throughout my body things that I was told all my life. You ain't gonna be shit, girl. You ain't never gonna be nothing. You're not gonna amount to be nothing. And in the era that I grew up, Bobby socks, crinoline slits, women were taught to be self-serving. I wasn't raised to have a career on my own. Or the career that I was raised to have was serving someone else. So that's the mindset I had. I don't know about anybody else in here, but like when I grew up, I was taking mental pictures of things that I saw. And I saw my mother come home and put on the Betty Crocker fucking apron and stuff. And I saw her always cooking. I never saw my father to the stove cooking anything. And I saw her always setting the table and everything. And I'm like, well, she work every day. Why is she so kind? I also saw my mother get beat. I also see people in my relatives celebrate drinking and stuff. I had one aunt that used to make wine in the basement. You know, they used to get together on different holidays and she'd bring out the barrel and everybody'd be laughing and partying. So this is what I associated with fun. Because nobody ever sat down and said, this is how you have fun, baby. Or this is how you do that or this or whatever. I took those mental pictures. I assimilated what I grew up with. So when all the adults would get up and go to the bathroom or whatever, I'd help myself. So I formed this addictive behavior before I even knew what was going on. And I took that same old addictive behavior that I had into adulthood. Not knowing that I stopped myself and stagnated myself from growing emotionally. Now, the expectations that Wendy D had on her life, they're like, I was going to die getting high. I was just going to have a grand old time. If I go to sleep, God, let me go to sleep in another position. I don't want no responsibilities. I just want to live and have fun, 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 until it became not fun anymore. Until it became, like I said, in that third step that I, like, abandoned my whole physical, emotional, and spiritual existence. Till, like, I just let myself go. Till, like, I had just forgot that I had 5 little children at home depending on me. Till, like, I just forgot that I had a husband that loved me. Till I just forgot that I was an adult now, for real, and I needed to be responsible or bring something to the table. But I was emotionally and spiritually bankrupt. I wasn't able to bring nothing to the table. 116th Street and 8th Ave was my playground. There was a hotel there that I just loved. Used to stay there. Matter of fact, I took all my kids' Christmas shopping money there. I was supposed to be leaving one day to bring everybody bomber jackets, and I did bomb the jacket right up in that hotel. I don't even remember what their faces looked like as I came home, but I can just imagine how devastated and disappointed they were. See, I had 5 children, but none of them ever knew me until December 26, 1995. Nobody ever got the chance to know who Wendy was. Not my children. Not my parents. Just like the reading said, I didn't give a damn about nothing. Did all the things that I wanted. Used to pray and get all the jobs I wanted because I was an addict and I was good at manipulating my way around anybody's ear. So I had jobs that would make you think that there was an education behind it. So I just did shit. You know, I don't know about nobody, but I was just like a con woman or something. Whatever you wanted me to be, I was. You wanted me to be a good secretary? All right. I'd go. I did whatever the secretary had to do, just so I can get one more. You wanted me to be working in the restaurant? Okay. As long as I can get that yet at the end of the week, so I can get one more. And as long as you had a cash register that I could steal from, things was fine. And then one day my higher power said, "Tired of you playing, little girl. This is enough. You got a job to do, and I kept you alive from being your own chemist for a reason." Now, I was kind of reluctant. I looked up like, "You got jokes, because I'm not going in recovery telling all them people what's going on in my life, and I'm not going to be talking about nothing. Like, so I'm not going there." But something happens. I don't know about your life, but something happens in my life. Come on, water. Lips are getting all dry, so tell your chemical changes. Something happened in my life where I sought recovery diligently. I got so sick and tired of looking at the person that I saw in the mirror. I got so sick and tired of smelling the way I was smelling. I got so sick and tired of having myself. Back then we had jury curls, right? And I was getting a little age, right? So my jury curl was really like a half fro. And I didn't have no dye that continuously dyed and looked good. So, you know, I would just put the little rag on and go. And we also wore tans back in those days. So a rag and a tan, and I was out. Wendy D from Carrum Street. But my higher power said, "Enough. Enough is enough." So I really, honestly, and truly felt like there was a nudge in my back that, like, just pushed my ass out the door to a detox. So I actually called them and talked on the phone. That was amazing. I was talking to somebody that asked me to get help when I really didn't want none. And the man said, "Okay, come in Christmas Eve. You can come in." I said, "Listen, we serious now. I got to save my life." And he said, "Come in Christmas Eve." I said, "But wait a minute. Can I come after Christmas? Because I want to celebrate it with my grandchildren." I had grandchildren by now. So he laughed on the phone. He said, "Yeah," because he really didn't think I was going to make it. See, because I had donned the doorstep of these places before. I had just got out of another detox 12 days prior. But I had news for them this trip. I was going to do this. I didn't know how I was going to do it, but I was determined to get clean because I was real sick and tired of that shell. Some people looked at me and they said, "Damn, girl, you look like a hanger. There's nothing but a head." I didn't have to wear no bra. I didn't have to wear none of that stuff. I used to have to put on belts and 2 or 3 pairs of pants just to look like I had something going down the street. Nobody was going to hire me like that, and I had a body odor. Look, even if you take a bath, when I started sweating, there's a sweat that was emitting from my pores. It was like, "Ugh, what the hell's going on?" So I needed help and didn't know I needed help, nor did I want help. But I went on to this detox, right? Not Christmas Eve. Day after Christmas. Had to do some more damage. I had to make sure that perforated hole in my nose was secure. So, we went to the detox. And when I say we, I'm talking about my higher power that I choose to call God now. And he kept me there. He kept me there no matter how much I fight it. Because I told him, I said, "Look, we got to do this time. We're getting old." We were 47 years old back then. Still thinking I was a teenager, 47. Still thinking I had shit going on, knowing that that's when everything goes south in a woman's body, right? But you couldn't tell me that I ain't had it going on, because I didn't have to wear no bra, because I had shit. body was void of all that good stuff. Didn't have to wear a belt. Safety pins were good enough. Well, anyway, we went to the detox, and after the detox, I told him to please keep me because I was still feeling kind of nervous. I felt like I was going to do something. I thought I was slicking the detox because you weren't supposed to bring cigarettes up in there, and I heard people were rolling up dust, and I didn't want dust, so I was able to mingle a couple of cigarettes up in there, but I wasn't smart enough to know that, like, in the room they had these vents, and, like, when you light the cigarette up, the nurse was going to know, so I stayed in the detox, and I was on punishment I don't know how many times. Always had me writing. Sent me to a doctor and he said, man, what's wrong with you? I said, well, I'm mad. He said, what are you mad about? I said, I don't fucking know, but if I keep coming around here, I'm going to figure it out. I was mad because I had to do what I had to do to stay clean. I didn't want to do it that way. I always did things my way. Now I had to do some other stuff like everybody else did. I didn't want that. All I wanted was to shine, right? I didn't want to smell no more. I saw a couple of people with pieces of jewelry and everything on. I wanted to learn how to do all that stuff. I was used to assimilating things. When it was time to leave the detox, they said, we're not going to let you go, Wendy. We're going to keep you an extra weekend. I'm like, what the fuck? You know, but at that time in New Jersey, it was a whole bunch of snow. And it was all right because I didn't drive. And like this is a funny story. Before I went to detox, I met this guy. And I used to see him going back and forth in his big Mark IV car or Mark V, whatever the hell it was. All I know was big. So, you know, we had a big car. You assume people got money. Right away, my expectation was, I'm going to make this motherfucker my husband. Because my husband had died when I was 39. I was going to make it because I didn't want to work. I wanted somebody to take care of his ass. I did not want to work. Well, he was going back and forth because he was a chick. But I said, you know how we women think. I'm going to change that. After he get a hold of this, he ain't going to want trick no more. Well, baby, finally I did move in. But it was never love. I was just another trick to him. No matter how much that recovery had formed me into being the person that my higher power finally wanted me to be, no matter how much that I used to bring him home thinking that he was going to like this and that and everything was going to work and I was going to introduce him to my kids, we was going to be one big happy motherfucking family, it didn't work. I came home lots of times and there'd be females there. And being that I was the queen, I had to kick ass. Shit. But anyway, God rest his soul, he's dead. See, my higher power had been protecting me the whole time I was in recovery. A whole bunch of rejection ain't rejection. It's just fucking protection. A whole lot of times when I want to do my own stuff, real right stuff, it don't work like that. It's protection. It ain't rejection. And I need to look at my cup halfway full, not always halfway empty. I don't need to be sucking my thumb somewhere with my lip poked out because I ain't spoiled no more. Recovery and working the steps and doing the concepts and working the tradition has formed an adult now. We're responsible. We know how to do things. We got a sponsor that we work with. We go to meetings. We do service work. My high power is so good, and this is not to brag, that like every time I used to go to a job, there was all the papers and all everything was all already set up. All I had to do was either punch a fucking clock or sign in. My high power one day said, you're going to do your own program. You don't work for enough people. You're going to do your own stuff. You're going to be able to call your own hours. You're going to have to work third shift no more, baby girl, because your ass getting old. I got something for you. So I went to another place where I do service at someday, and my spiritual leader got up, and he didn't even ask me. He said, we're getting ready to have a transitional house, and Wendy's going to run it. And I looked around, and I thought there was maybe another Wendy up in there. You know, but it was me, and I was really, like, honored. And, like, after that service, I got out and said, okay, God, now you think you're so smart. Yeah, you done put this assignment on me. You better help a girl out. But it happened. I mean, I was able to go to different programs and see how they run. And I was able to get information from them. And I was able to go to different towns. And then I was also smart enough to get my receipt so the church would pay for it, too, you know. We ain't stupid. But program's been up and running since 2004 now, only by the grace of God. I'm the only employee, and I call my own damn hours. If I don't feel like being bothered, I put a sign up saying that unless it's an extreme emergency, don't put that stuff on me. But the good thing is, all while I was doing this, my higher power knew what he was doing because he was forming me to be the kind of person he wants me to be. He was teaching me how to talk to other people without hurting their feelings. Since you all think you're so damn smart, Miss Wendy, let me see if you know how to talk to a whole bunch of people and let them know something's wrong with them or this is the way they need to go without hurting their feelings. So he put me through this school to learn how to help these people, and I got straight A's. Another amazing goddamn family. It was just amazing. You know, and yeah, I curse. I'm still in work. I mean, he's not finished yet. The book says I'm not going to be perfect. What you want? I'm trying my best. I'm doing my best. I've changed enormously. Because if you saw the person that I was in 1994, you wouldn't even let me through the door. If you saw the person I was in 1994, you would have told my ass to sit over there some damn way. You would have said, no, she can't come. But not in Narcotics Anonymous. I'm talking about other police. I know y'all wouldn't do that. You know, expectations, letting go and living beyond. My higher power is just such an awesome thing, the way he works on me. Even though I created, or he helped me create this program, right? I still don't want the accolades from it. So I got a couple of bosses. Because I still just don't think that he's worked on me enough. Where I can call myself the boss. I might get too fucking cocky. I'm aware of that with me. So the place where I go to service on this certain day is the president. And this other lady that runs for Congress in the town where I live is my boss. And then it's me. And there's some other courts, my board. And they are real good to me. They are very patient. I know I'm a work in progress. Sometimes I want... Let me tell you how good my higher power is to me. Back to that rejection thing. I have met somebody in recovery. And I was in one of them shits. You know, the kind of shit that we think we're in love on the woman's side. I'm not even going to get into it. That's enough said. Enough said. Trust me. But anyway, my higher power got me out of that and put me on to something where I ain't have time for nothing but prayer and work. And I'm good with that. Because in that, I learned a lot of lessons. I came down with the Narcotics Anonymous National Anthem song, Hepatitis C. And when I got that, I'm like, you got to be joking, me? Shit, you hung up in the hotel. You did all these other things. Why not you? Then I had got diabetes, So I make a joke of it and I say I'm diabolical. I like to make jokes and stuff. You gotta can't take stuff too serious. Gotta keep a light heart about shit so it ease the blow. Then we went a little more serious, and that's why I believe the higher power created this job. So that I'd be able to lay down for a while and some people be able to pamper me. Because I came down with something called like spinal stenosis. And in this spinal stenosis, my bones were like deteriorating in my spine. And like when your spine starts messing up, everything else get all messed up. Because your bone is really connected to another damn bone. I found that out. That wasn't just a song. So anyway, I was able to allow some people to take care of me and wash me and everything, and that was new for me, because you want to wash me? Why you want me to be clean? We don't want you to stink. Stupid. But anyway, people really cared about me, and they took care of me. It took time for me to learn how to allow somebody else to pamper me. It took time for me to learn how to let somebody take care of me. I wasn't used to that, but I couldn't walk. I was like in the bed sick for a couple of years and just couldn't do nothing. And just before that, my boss had said she didn't want the computer in my office downstairs in the office. She wanted me to bring the office upstairs in my room, and I couldn't comprehend it then, because back then, right then when she said it, I wasn't sick. But my higher power knew. He knew what was up. He knew I was going to have to roll out of bed and type some things. I didn't know. I was just mad because you wanted more shit in my room. Well, everything worked out all right. I went and had this operation. They put some metal in my titanium or whatever it was in my spine. And it took a while, but then the doctor said, I don't think you're going to walk because your nerves are too bad. And I'm like, well, damn. Can you imagine Wendy D not walking nowhere? The proud person that I was all everywhere. I was just like my name. Wendy. Gone. Just like the wind. You know, but my higher power slowed me down so I could listen to what he had to say. After all, he was in charge, not Wendy. So my clients started taking care of me, and it was still okay because they were still coming in. It taught me really for real how to talk to people. It taught me really for real how to ask somebody to do something and not think that I was being a pain in their ass, that I really needed it. But the hit on it for me was they wanted to do it. I couldn't believe it. I just couldn't believe it. So now I could walk around for a while because my daughter waved a chip in front of my nose. You know how people used to wave a dope bag in front of your nose and you do whatever the hell it was they wanted you to do. You jump through whatever hoop it was they wanted you to jump through. You go down and do whatever it was they wanted you to do. You do pedicures and manicures. You become whatever it was they wanted you to do. As long as you get you what, you know. So my daughter said, well, Mom, if you start walking, I'll give you a trip wherever you want to go. And I was like, damn, I ain't went nowhere. So I started going to them classes and sitting up and doing this, doing that, and doing this, up and down, you know, and I started walking. And then I called my daughter, and so I went on a trip. All exclusive, everything paid for. I didn't have to pay for nothing but bubble gum and cigarettes. Got off that trip and went on another one, and I didn't even know that I was going to be allowed to do all these things. That's what I'm trying to say. My expectations that I had on my life is that I would die using. The expectation that my higher power that I choose to call God breathed some different kind of life into me. He gave me, put me in the room with some people that was going to understand exactly what I was going through. I even thought, let me tell you how twisted I was when I came in recovery. I always wanted to be a dance speaker. You know how you go to meetings, you see them passing the bag and everybody talking and everything, and you say, damn, I want to be a speaker because, like, I want to get paid too. They passing the bag. because I always thought the speakers got paid, so I always wanted to get up there and, like, get paid. I didn't read none of them damn pamphlets as a newcomer. All I wanted, I was starting to grow brass. I was starting to go. All I had to do was go get some coffee because I wanted everybody to see what was happening. They didn't care what was happening, or it was just an illusion that was happening to them. My high power was working to me, and I didn't even know it. Because after a while, I sat still. I sat up front. I got a sponsor like they told me to do. I started going to work, started going to school. Not school, working steps. Because I remember that's what I called it when I first got the book and everything, and then she told me to go get a composition book, then she told me to go get a dictionary. I'm like, well, goddamn. I got to do all of this? Can't I just come to meetings and just mind my business and just sit up front and just not you? She said, well, what do you need to know how? So I put my head down and I picked it back up. I said, okay, you got this. But one day, you know, always trying to make a deal with my higher power. If I stay clean another week, you gonna give me a man? If I stay clean another week or a month or get that 90-day keychain, God, can I have one of them gold chains like I see that girl with on? I didn't know or realize at that time that everything came in time. I was still on the right now kick. Gotta have this shit right now. Well, how am I gonna get it? But a day at a time, my higher power was kind to me, and I was able to learn some things through a great sponsor. My first sponsor is gone now. I rest in peace, but she taught me a lot. Because I used to have this job, talking about expectations and liking to steal shit. I used to have this job, and I don't care if y'all say anything now, because ain't nobody know. I'm not getting ready to tell you the name of the damn store. And there ain't no videotape to back the shit up. There wasn't even no satellites at that time going down to the store. So don't nobody know but me and my high power. And y'all now, because I'm getting ready to tell you. I used to work at this store. And then, you know, And the cash register wasn't right, and it wasn't registered and shit right, so I used to like, okay, one for you and two for me, and one for you and two for me. You know, and I used to do that, and this sponsor that's now gone used to say, well, you keep it up, you're gonna be humiliated. And I didn't know what the fuck she was talking about, because I was only on the second step back then. I said, well, I'm supposed to be doing crazy stuff. That's how I learn, ain't it? This is the keep coming back process. That's how I learned, through my experiences, my strength, and hope to get some fucking hope. So I kept stealing from this job until I didn't get humiliated the way that she thought I was. I didn't get handcuffed. It started on the inside. I started getting tired of stealing the money because it graduated from $10 to hundreds of damn dollars. I thought I was supposed to be going there and getting paid. Matter of fact, I went to the boss and asked for the raise when I was supposed to get the raise. He didn't give me a raise. I said, it's all right. You ain't got to give me no raise. Because I knew how to get my own raise. But after a while, it didn't start feeling good. And I looked up again like, come on, not right now. You know, I didn't want to work right now, but we can't tell our high power when to work on us and how to work on us and what to do with us. He knows. He dictates to us. So I stopped stealing from that job. As a matter of fact, I don't want no other job with no cash register because I still don't know how well I am in that area. And that was back in the 80s. I quit that job. I quit that job. I didn't give a damn what they said. I know why I was quitting. I didn't have to tell them I got to quit because I got to quit because if I don't quit, I'll be visiting at McMahon facility. And you said that we don't have a good education. I beg your pardon. I went to Dunklin College for criminal knowledge. I got a good education. I learned how to stay high every damn day on the street, whether I had money or not. I woke up with a plan. So we are very intelligent. We are very articulate. We are very manipulative. We do whatever it is we got to do to get where we got to go when it is used. And I do whatever I got to do to get where I'm going while I'm not using. Determination is the key. Sponsorship is the heart. Service work is the joint. Without these things to help, I wouldn't be nothing. I still do service work every single day while I'm working at that facility that the higher power helped me create. I'm here to tell you that this shit works. I don't know how it works. It don't work by osmosis. I'm not going to be able to sit by you and rub your elbow and get clean or have 90 days or 9 years or 90 fucking years. It works by how you work it. I'm going to close and say that through all those 3 years that I was ill and couldn't make it to meetings, I didn't use. When the doctor gave me prescriptions of Percocet and Oxycontin, I used them at the exact time I was supposed to use them. When I was in the hospital after I had the surgery and I had that drip, whatever the fuck that drip was, the nurse came in there and she said, "You got to keep pushing the button." I said, "I don't want to push the button. Don't you understand? I pushed the button long before I got here." She said, "Well, we're going to have to take you off." I said, "Take me off and give me some goddamn Tylenol. I don't want this shit no more. Not even if the doctor says you got to have it. Thanks for the free high, God, but I don't want it." Throughout all of that, I didn't use. There were times I was in so much pain, I felt like using. There were times I was in so much pain, I used to go to sleep and didn't even want to wake up. I'm telling you, I had a plan on how I was going to die. I was just going to sleep the whole process out and not wake up because I couldn't stand the pain. But I knew that there was a power that was greater than me. I knew that there was something that brought me from the muck and the mire that kept me alive all them years that I was putting strange needles in strange places and doing strange things to my body. I knew that there was a power greater than me that kept me alive. I knew that there was a power greater than me that brought me to the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous with people to understand what the hell I was going through. And this time I had instructions on how to live. I had the concepts on how to serve. I had the traditions on not to kill nobody today, Miss Draper, please. Look, how much time I got?
About 2 minutes.
2 minutes?
Yeah.
Oh, God. It's not that I'm losing concentration, it's that my back's starting to, I want to sit down. You know, my high power that I choose to call God has been great to me. All I had to do was take that first step and make that first decision to come into recovery. And that was a deep one for me. And when I came in, I was just like a little bitty baby taking little itsy bitsy teeny weeny steps, even when I thought I was a grown motherfucker in an old person body. And he was patient with me. And it taught me patience. I do know one thing, that when I pray, I have to be very particular, and I no longer ask my high power for patience. Did that in that store where I used to steal all that money. Some people used to come in there and rob, and I thought I was Robin Hood, and I thought they were stealing my shit that I used to have to run after. Stuck on stupid. I was parked in dumb. Found out that, look, if they take the stuff, just go ahead and take it. I can't control everything. I can't control what's going on in the front while something's happening in the back. But I knew then that I wasn't ready for sales. I knew I was not the right one. I also knew because they had a cash register, it was broke, didn't register the money, and the register that I was sending back wasn't the right thing. Like, and I think they knew too, because it went under after I quit. I know that my high power that I choose to call God is not done with me yet. I know that I was blessed and honored and humbled enough to be able to come down here, cane and all. And there used to be a time where I used to be hating with people the way they would look at me, because sometimes people look at us for the outside existence. Some people still ain't well enough to find out what the fuck is going on the inside. I like to find out what's going on in the inside. You could be blind with your tongue hanging out and whatever. I've never, ever made fun of anybody that was like disabled and stuff. You know, I remember years ago when I was a little kid, I had an aunt, and there was some blind men that went up on the stage, and they was doing some singing, and my aunt started laughing at them, and the very next week, her beautiful twins died. That taught me a lesson early on to not make fun of nothing that my higher power puts on this earth, because it's all here for a reason. I know that I'm here for a reason, and the reason is to carry a message that any addict, can stop using and lose the desire or whatever. I ain't no book person. That's why I had to bring the book, so I don't even feel like opening. But I will read one thing if you don't mind. And it's coming from out the third step, and it's what motivates me. And it says the spiritual principles that we are now practicing will guide us. Me. I'm going to put it in me. Not just in the third step, but throughout my recovery. The three steps provide me with a solid spiritual foundation that I will need to work the rest of the steps with. I keep my internal surrender alive by actively practicing faith. The faith and the willingness required to work the third step. In other words, I've admitted that I'm powerless. And I have the inability to manage my own life. I've come to believe something. And now I need to surrender to the care of a loving God of my own understanding. My name is Wendy D. And those are my expectations. Letting go and living beyond. That's all I have.
Thank William T. and Wendy D. for speaking. And I've asked a friend in recovery to lead me to recovery.
Hi, family. My name is Marty, and I am an addict. We do recover when at the end of the road we find that we can no longer function as human beings, either with or without drugs. We all face the same dilemma. What is there left to do? There seems to be this alternative: either go on as best as we can to the bitter ends, jail, institutions, or death, or find a new way to live. In years gone by, very few addicts ever had this last choice. Those who are addicted today are more fortunate. For the first time in man's entire history, a simple way has been proven itself in the lives of many addicts. It is available to us all. This is a simple, spiritual, not religious program known as Narcotics Anonymous.